The first reading this morning comes from Lucia Chiavola Birnbaum's essay, written in 1997, The African Heritage of Italians and Other European Americans. Great title. There's three sections, A, B, and C.
From genetics, we learn that all peoples of the earth are ultimately of African origin, and that all ethnic groups are an array of genes so bewildering that an African American may have fewer genes connecting him or her to the continent of Africa than may a European American. White Anglo-American Protestants perceived Italian immigrants as dark, although they applauded Garibaldi in Risorgimento, were fond of traveling to Italy, and admired the Renaissance. When they saw Italians in their own cities, they were troubled. They saw that Italians prayed to the Madonna and not to the austere Calvinist Father God. They perceived Italian women as sensual, Italian men as surly, and all Italians as unsuitable for American citizenship. Southern Italians were seen as swarthy, dark-mooded, sad-faced, a half-civilized stock. The similarity of Italians and African Americans threw William Dean Howells, a Boston Brahmin and man of letters, off balance.
The second reading comes from the writings of Giuseppe Mazzini. These are from his selected writings, 1849 to 1870. And at the center here, you see a canara, which is the candelabra that is kindled over a period of a week starting today in African American families and other families that celebrate Kwanzaa. Now, this is lit every night, and the central candle is lit first every night, so it stands for a different principle. But obviously, for the sake of this reading, I'm just going to have to light all the seven lights as an illustration of what you're going to be hearing. We will go with the first one, which is Umoja, which means unity.
The second is Kuchika Lugunga. Oh, I'm sorry. Humanity has need of unity. Without unity, progress is impossible. There may be movement, yes, but it will not be consecrated. There will be disorder and opposition.
These are Swahili words, by the way, and Swahili is a constructed language. Yeah, kind of like Esperanto. The people who devised it took a number of African languages and kind of fused them together and gave them a common grammar. And it is spoken in many places in Africa, not quite like English as a lingua franca, but moving in that direction. Kuchichagulia, self-determination.
Where the activity of a portion of the powers and faculties of the individual is either canceled or dormant, where there is not a common principle recognized, accepted, and developed by all, there is no true nation, no people, but only a multitude, an accidental agglomeration of people whom mere circumstances have called together and whom circumstances may divide again. In the name of the love you bear your country, you must peacefully but untiringly combat the existence of privilege and inequality in the land that gave you life.
Ujimi, collective responsibility.
We have recognized collective existence. Say not I, but we. Let each individual among you be guarantor, responsible for his fellow citizens. A true country is a community of free and equal citizens bound together in concord to labor towards a common aim. You are bound to make it and to maintain it such. A country is not an aggregation, but an association.
Ujamaa, cooperative economics.
In association, in cooperation, is the seed of an entire social transformation, which, by emancipating you from servitude, will gradually improve the economic position of the country.
Nia, purpose.
Every revolutionary change is the work of a principle approved by a majority of the inhabitants of a country, a new purpose, which the authorities always misrepresent or reject.
Kuumba, creativity.
Music is the harmonious voice of creativity itself. An echo of an unseen world, one note of the divine concord to which the whole universe is destined.
Imani, faith.
A new era is dawning. A new faith is being substituted for the old. The new faith will not accept any privileged interpreters. Faith requires an aim capable of embracing life as a whole, a profound belief in a mission, and the obligation to fulfill it.
Kwanzaa, beginning today, December 26th, up to January 1st, a celebration of African-American culture with a candle lighting ceremony and special foods of African origin. It's a daily ceremony. It's associated with particular Pan-African colors, green, black, and red, and cultural practices derived from the rich and diverse cultures of Africa. I hope you got a sense of that diversity from just the list of languages that I read during the meditation preparatory to the Great Silence. But what does Kwanzaa have to do with me, a minister of Italian-American origin? And what does it have to do with the state of Ohio? And moreover, what does it have to do with Unitarian Universalism? Plenty, actually. So let me start with a little history. In the winter of 1968, my first year in college, African-American Unitarian Universalists established the Black Affairs Council, BAC, for those of you who like acronyms, whose purpose was, quote, to support the empowerment of African Americans in a predominantly Euro-American culture, unquote. That's from our denominational website. Very clear. At the Cleveland, Ohio General Assembly that year, delegates voted to give $4 million in grants through BAC to groups or people, individuals, who would help further the self-empowerment of African Americans throughout the nation. Maulana Karenga, a professor of Africana Studies at Long Beach State University in California, was given a grant by BAC to do just that. And with that grant, money does accomplish things, you know. With that grant, he was finally able to publish and spread news and information about the week-long celebration of Kwanzaa he had already been working on for a couple of years. So, yes, you're right, it's a young festival, to be sure, but it is getting its sea legs. It's gaining ground in some areas faster than even expected. So the Ohio connection is made clear partially by me mentioning that the grant money was voted upon in Cleveland. And the UU connection is made clear because it was the UU Black Affairs Council which granted the money to Dr. Karenga. Now, what about me as an Italian American? What does Kwanzaa have to do with me? Well, again, I have to answer with the word plenty. After all, it's a celebration of recovered roots, roots that have been lost and then found again. When your ancestors are taken from their home shores, denied their languages, prayers, religious practices, foodstuffs, cultural features of all sorts, and even their climate and soil, your roots will get severed. You sever the roots of any plant, and you don't have to be a botanist to know that real damage is done. You sever the roots of any human population. And again, you don't need to be a social scientist to understand that deep damage is done. So the idea of Kwanzaa is to create structured conversations and rituals that might begin to undo that damage and restore, recover, and reclaim the strong roots of African cultures. Cultures which had been stolen from millions of people by the cruel fact of the systematic enslavement in this country of people of African origin. Now, my own ancestors were not enslaved on plantations. They were not dragged over here on ships. They came over here of their own desire and need. Over 10 million people immigrated from Italy. What you may not know is that many of them went back. A full half of them, as a matter of fact, over 5 million. They found the cultural realities of the United States painful, the emotional and courtesy patterns too alien and strange. They could not find any entry into the systems of this country. So they returned back to their villages. Now, 1% of them, of those who stayed and who did not go back, decided to create their own underground organized system to control, if possible, the larger system they could not enter, their skin being, as Birnbaum made so clear, dark. Unfortunately, one of the main images that many modern people associate with Italian Americans is the image that comes out of that 1%, 1%, the image of a mafia don with smoke coming out of a henchman's gun standing nearby. No one makes movies about grandmothers making pasta, or parents working hard at two jobs to put their children through school. I guess that's not an interesting story. 99% of all immigrants from Italy who stayed here did things like that, made pasta, worked two jobs, did not get involved with crime in any way. But I guess rolling pins are less important than guns in our society. Still, over half of all the immigrants did return. When we hear of the great immigrations coming from Europe to America, the greatest country in the world, we never hear the other side of that story. But my grandparents stayed, all four of them. My father's parents never returned, not even once, back to see their ancestral town of Fanano. Not because they couldn't afford to, my father would have paid for their trip, but because they didn't want to. They had a hard time over there, their poverty was tremendous, and they loved this country. By the standards of many people sitting in this room, they were still very, very poor. Compared to the standards of where they had come from, they felt very content, almost wealthy. After all, they could eat meals every day. My mother's parents, however, did visit Italy a number of times and their ancestral town of Sestola. They had a different experience. My immigrant grandparents knew their ethnicity was not always prized by the larger population of the United States. They heard the opinions of long-landed Americans. In Birnbaum's words, they saw that Italians pray to the Madonna, not to the austere Calvinist Father God. They perceived Italian women as sensual, Italian men as surly, and all Italians as unsuitable for American citizenship. And Southern Italians were seen as swarthy, dark-mooded, sad-faced, a half-civilized stock. And when Mussolini was ranting in Rome, it became a bit embarrassing to be Italian on these shores for a while. Many of the Italian Americans I have met here in Columbus come from families who anglicized their last names so as not to suffer the indignity of being thought to be Italian during the Second World War. Nevertheless, having said all this, my grandparents were not African Americans in any way. They were Italian Americans, specifically Emilians from the peasant villages and the huge mountains rising over Bologna and Modena. But Chiavola Birnbaum, in her essay, nevertheless wrote the following remarkable sentence. Do you remember it? The similarity of Italians and African Americans through William Dean Howells, a Boston Brahmin and man of letters, off balance. William Dean Howells. Another connection to Ohio, Columbus even. He was born in Martin's Ferry, Ohio, but moved around the state a lot. When he visited Boston in the mid-1800s, he met Ralph Waldo Emerson and Thoreau and that whole crowd and realized he was a Unitarian among Unitarians. He was, as Birnbaum said, a Boston Brahmin, but an Ohio boy at heart. And he found that the similarity between Italian and African Americans threw him off balance. Why? Because the same things that many longer-term Americans believed about Italian Americans were also believed about African Americans. They too were unsuited for American citizenship, being only half civilized, their men being so surly, their women being entirely too sensuous. Now, fortunately, as a Unitarian, Howell grew past his prejudice and gave up many of his misconceptions. And over time, he freely supported not only abolition and the absolute equality of all African Americans, being one of the founding members of the NAACP, but he also lifted up Italian poetry, giving a series of 12 amazing lectures over a period of a couple of years on contemporary, not Renaissance, literature. Italian culture was not just the past, but the present, he felt. His travel journals about his trips to Italy gained national praise. Howells, Mary White Overton, and John Haynes Holmes were all Unitarians who promoted and founded the NAACP. But it was another member and founder of the NAACP, the great scholar W.E. Du Bois, who was especially deeply affected by the connections between Italian Americans and African Americans. He was completely outraged when some Italian Americans who were naturalized U.S. citizens living in New Orleans were lynched. 11 men killed all at once, the largest mass lynching in American history. Du Bois was livid and expressed his rage with fierce sarcasm. But he claimed that this outrage showed him that African descent alone was not the focus of violence in America. And he claimed that his sympathies had widened because of that incident. The government in Rome protested the lynchings, and the U.S. government sent them a payment of $25,000 to shut them up, claiming, as was always done with African-American lynchings, that the case was inconclusive. It's true that over the years, Italians gradually became white. Joe DiMaggio, Mayor LaGuardia, Frank Sinatra, all of these personalities certainly helped that along. And the darker skin of especially Southern Italians and Sicilians eventually just became exotic. Personally, I didn't need an Italian version of Kwanzaa because I was lucky. My grandfather taught me my roots quite deliberately. He used to sit me down regularly, and he empowered me by doing so. He told me that it was okay to be who I was. He told me about Italian poetry and art and the stories of people like Galileo. He also told me about Garibaldi, whose name had been charcoaled into a town wall of Sestola, and which was still visible when my grandfather was a child. He was born in 1888. He told me about the Risorgimento, you heard that word in the readings, which is the Italian Revolution comparable to the American Revolution. It created modern Italy. Back in 1800, there wasn't Italy. There were just a bunch of different little countries and states. After the Risorgimento, there wasn't Italy. My grandfather used to say, you have to read Mazzini, you have to read Cavour and Garibaldi, but especially Mazzini. You can read Jefferson, you can read Adams. They were smart. I like what they wrote. But you're also Italian, and you need to read Mazzini. He was a principled man, and you can learn about how to live your life from him. Please do that. I did. It didn't make a lot of sense to me when I first read it. I wasn't as interested in history when I was a teenager. But recently, I just reread my Mazzini. And wouldn't you know it, I didn't have to do a bit of work to find all the principles symbolized by Dr. Karenga and the Kwanzaa candles expressed very, very well by Mazzini. As you heard in the second reading, the principles spoken and written by Mazzini and the principles of Kwanzaa are a pretty close parallel. I grew up with those principles. I was told this was how to live my life. And the thing is, I really believe that most cultures on earth express these great principles. They may stress one more than another, perhaps. They may use different cultural expressions to express them. They may tell different stories to their children. The Anansi stories from Africa are charming and funny and delightful, and that's one way of doing things, but I grew up with different stories. But the stories expressed the same principles about how to live a good life. I think although these principles are in every culture, these days they're often obfuscated and hidden behind the trivialities of our modern consumer culture. So it makes sense that all of us have to find ways to remember the principles that are there at the center of our upbringings, in our histories, in our heritage, whatever that heritage may be, even if it's what we used to call in Detroit a Heinz 57 heritage. Some ancestor from every country in Europe, Africa, whatever. A great mixture, but there is richness in all of those heritages, like there is richness in all of those cultures in Africa, all those languages being spoken. When Italy was made into a country by the Risorgimento, the number of dialects spoken in Italy that were mutually unintelligible was greater than any other language system on earth. People from two villages away couldn't understand anybody from two villages away. My grandparents came over here on a boat with Neapolitans. My grandparents were Emilian. They had to use sign language. They couldn't understand a word. Not only that, most people seem to think that Italian is the language of Italy. Well, it's been made the language of Italy, specifically Toscano, Florentine. But there are 13 other languages spoken in Italy, not including the immigrant languages like Slovenian and Albanian. I'm talking about languages like Friulian. There's a whole literature of Friuli. Occitan, Ligurian, Cimbrian. It was a Tower of Babel when Mazzini started to unify Italy. But he tried to come up with a common language to help people communicate with each other, just like Karenga came up with the idea of using Swahili, which is a combination language. He couldn't access all African cultures. You heard how many different languages are spoken. And the same thing with my grandparents. My grandparents were able to speak their dialect, but they learned a little bit of Toscano. Still, when my grandmother would call her brother on the phone, she used to say, "Ma parla Emiliano, speak the dialect, speak Emilian. I can't understand when you speak Toscano." It was hard for her. Karenga did exactly what Mazzini did, in a different way, in a different country, for different reasons. But he tried to help people to gain back their roots and their heritage and to be proud. Anyone who can do something like that is doing a very good thing indeed. It's self-empowerment, the building up of pride and self-confidence. It's what the Unitarian Universalist delegates at the Cleveland General Assembly were talking about when they voted the $4 million. They already knew, as Unitarian Universalists, that unity and self-determination were important for moving forward in life, and that nothing can be accomplished without creativity, fiscal cooperation, purpose, and faith, faith being the word for confidence and trust. And of course, shared responsibility. I had tremendous fun working on this sermon and researching it. I didn't know many of these things. I was surprised as I made the connections. But I was also changed by it. I learned about the interdependence of all creation, one of our Unitarian Universalist principles, in a way that I never knew it before. And for the gift of being able to work through personal history, shared history, visionary history, the history of Africa and the history of Italy and the history of America and the history of Unitarian Universalism and the history of Ohio, I am truly grateful.